11. Next week, Michael's guest will be the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and the producer of today's edition was Chris Marshall. Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Sunday afternoon on BBC Radio 3, if you've recently tuned in. In a couple of minutes, more of the music of Monteverdi in today's early music show. And following that, we've a Baroque Spring live concert from Clandon Park in Surrey. Music by Handel and Vivaldi at 2 o'clock. Now, though, it's 1 o'clock, and here's the latest BBC News. The Chancellor, George Osborne, has said the government will compensate any British military personnel or civil servants in Cyprus if they're affected by a new bank tax imposed as part of a bailout for the island. The deal, which was agreed by the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, would involve a levy of up to 10% on all savings accounts in the country. Mr. Osborne, who's preparing to deliver his budget on Wednesday, has said that measures for a simpler state pension system here will be brought forward a year to 2016. New pensioners will then begin receiving a flat rate payment worth £144 a week. The Chancellor insisted he was sticking to his plans to tackle the deficit, but the Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, said that continuing with the same policies represented the economics of the lunatic farm. Senior Conservatives say they hope the parties at Westminster can come to a last-minute deal on press regulation ahead of a Commons vote tomorrow. The Tory proposal for a new watchdog could be defeated after the Liberal Democrats sided with Labour in calling for a new system which would go further and be backed by law. The bodies of a British man and his 12-year-old son have been found in the French Alps. They'd apparently fallen to their deaths while hiking in Chamonix. Police in central India say six men have been arrested in connection with the gang rape of a Swiss woman who was on a cycling holiday with her husband. The woman was attacked on Friday, 3 months after the fatal gang rape of a student on a bus in Delhi caused a national outcry. Pope Francis has given his first Sunday blessing to tens of thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square in Rome. Breaking with tradition, he departed from a written speech about God's power to forgive. He wished everyone a happy Sunday and a good lunch. And the weather. Persistent rain, sleet and hill snow will continue in central Scotland and across southern and southeastern areas of England. Elsewhere, there'll be a mixture of sunshine and showers this afternoon. Tonight, eastern Scotland and northeast England will have increasing snow showers. In other areas, there'll be scattered showers, some of them heavy, with fog also developing. That's the news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at just coming up to 3 minutes past one. Now, in yesterday's early music show, Catherine Bott celebrated the genius of the Italian composer Monteverdi through his Vespers of 1610. Today, Catherine looks at another side of the composer.
Hello. In yesterday's early music show, Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610 demonstrated his expressive versatility and sense of drama in the context of liturgical music. Today, we and he are going to be entirely in the secular world. People who don't enjoy opera often explain themselves by falling back on that old chestnut about its being an exotic and irrational entertainment. And sometimes it is. But that's not how it started out. And in this Radio 3 Baroque Spring season, let's rejoice and give thanks for the genius of the man who wrote not the first opera, but the first grown-up one, Claudio Monteverdi. Over 36 years, he actually wrote 18 operas, but only three have survived complete. Today, I'm dipping into his first and last, the ennobling story of godly musician Orpheus, contrasted with the seamy tale of real-life Roman Emperor Nero and his coronation of Poppaea. From gods to monsters, two intensely dramatic pieces of theatre that were to provide a template for the next four centuries of opera. Imagine yourself an Italian grandee living in the city of Mantua. It's February the 24th, 1607, and you're heading for the Ducal Palace to attend the first performance of what court composer Monteverdi calls a fable in music, L'Orfeo. You've been to a few all-singing, all-dancing entertainments before, of course, at royal weddings and so on, and you don't know that the Baroque era is dawning. It won't be called that for another couple of centuries. But you do know that there's a lot of rather startling contemporary music about these days. Perhaps you're not sure if you'll like what you're about to hear. But at least you're guaranteed some very persuasive singing.
Fuori da
Persuasive singing indeed. John Mark Ainsley as Orfeo and Simon Grant as the ferryman of the River Styx, Caronte, with the New London Consort directed by Philip Pickett in the scene that's at the heart of Monteverdi's opera, L'Orfeo. Orfeo begs to be allowed to cross over into the underworld in search of his bride, and Monteverdi creates an aria that is truly revolutionary, virtuoso singing used not for show, but to prove the power of music. Each section of the lyric is set to a different melody, and each of the interspersing ritornelli introduces a different, ravishing instrumental sound. Why is Orfeo there? Because he cannot bear to live without his young wife, Euridice, bitten by a snake and whisked down to the kingdom of Pluto with no time to say goodbye. Monteverdi uses the sombre sounds of low viols and sackbuts to express not only Orfeo's despair, but also to convey the depths of the underworld, as a chorus of infernal spirits offers him a grave welcome. The New London Consort, directed by Philip Pickett, with the sounds of the underworld from Monteverdi's L'Orfeo. Throughout the story, we meet gods and mythological and symbolic characters, the spirit of music, hope, Pluto and Proserpina, and finally Apollo, who can offer partial consolation to a flawed hero among the stars. And the hero of classical drama must always have a tragic flaw. Orfeo couldn't resist disobeying Pluto and turned to look at his wife as they climbed back towards the light, thus losing her forever. This was important in 1607. What moral could the stories of real people offer to a highly educated opera audience? But Orfeo's friends are ordinary shepherds and shepherdesses, and Monteverdi's genius is to write music for them of profound psychological truth. Euridice's sudden death, for example. True to the classical tradition, that takes place off stage, and the first anyone knows of it is the arrival of a woman given only the name of Messaggera, messenger. Listen to her hesitancy as Orfeo demands to know what's wrong. She cannot bear to tell him.
Donde vieni? Come fai? Ninfa che porti?
And I was left with my heart brimming with pity and terror. Death in a lush Arcadian landscape recalled simply and starkly. On that recording, the role of Messaggera was sung by me, with John Mark Ainsley as Orfeo and theorbo player Paula Chateauneuf and organist David Roblow. As I said in yesterday's programme, I don't often play my own recordings on the Early Music Show, so I hope I'm forgiven. That New London Consort performance was recorded in 1991. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and I'm about to turn up again on CD in a very different context. A few years after the premiere of L'Orfeo, Monteverdi left Mantua for Venice, and Venice was where public opera was born. This is a topic that had two whole editions of The Early Music Show to itself a while back. So as I'm concentrating on Monteverdi today, here's an encapsulating quote from the diarist John Evelyn, writing about a night at the Venetian Opera in 1645, 2 years after the premiere of L'Incoronazione di Poppea. Most excellent musicians, vocal and instrumental, with a variety of scenes painted with no less art of perspective, and machines for flying in the air, and other wonderful motions. Taken together, it is one of the most magnificent and expensive diversions the wit of men can invent. Well, there aren't many special effects in Poppea, as indeed there hadn't been in L'Orfeo. But once again, there's acute psychological truthfulness expressed in music. Poppea is aimed at a different audience, though. In Venice, in 1643, you no longer have to be a well-connected grandee to enjoy a great night out at the opera. You just need to buy a ticket. The story is loosely based on real people. It features a murder attempt, an orgy, a suicide, comedy servants. But let's begin with the obligatory heavenly prologue, featuring those divinities Fortune, Virtue and Love. And what lesson do they have for us mere mortals? A pretty cynical one. They're arguing like fishwives about who has the most power over us.
Thank you.
Anna-Sophie von Otter is Fortune, I'm Virtue, and Marinella Pennicchi is Love, in the prologue to Monteverdi's L'Incoronazione di Poppea, with John Elliott Gardner directing the English Baroque soloists on that 1993 CD, recorded live at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. Bitchy Fortune and Prissy Virtue are both beaten in the brawl by cocky little Love. The three of us had a lot of fun performing that scene. Poppea was inspired by the story of Emperor Nero and his consort, and the zest in the story, for Venetians, was the triumph of wrong over right, heaven sent to prove that all this decadence and lust could only happen in a degenerate place like Rome, never in the civilised Republic of Venice. It's very simple, if soap opera-ish. Emperor Nero loves, or at any rate wants, Ottone's wife Poppea. Nero's scorned wife Ottavia orders the cuckolded Ottone to kill Poppea, and he very nearly does so, aided and abetted by his wannabe lover Drusilla, the nearest to a good person in the whole farrago. And all the way, characters don't behave quite as you'd expect. Ottavia, for example, is eventually exiled and sings a dignified lament, Addio Roma, which is often performed on its own in concert. But let's not forget that she starts the opera as a vengeful, betrayed wife, a woman who thinks it's perfectly okay to have her love rival killed. Here she is, ordering Ottone to do the deed.
Più presta, sia tanto più
And the Empress Ottavia gets her way. Ottone asks only for time, that I may teach my hand's brutality. Anne-Sophie von Otter and Michael Chance in a cruel dialogue from Monteverdi's opera L'Incoronazione di Poppea, John Elliott Gardner directing the English Baroque soloists. Ottone doesn't succeed in his awful mission. The god of love stops him. But he's disguised himself in Drusilla's clothes and she gets arrested. The more I try to summarise this plot, the more horrible it seems. One of the great rules of Venetian opera, stolen from the theatrical stage, states that it's funny to tread swiftly and heavily upon any scene of sublime love or tragedy with a spot of front-cloth comedy business. In Poppea, there's a telling role for that standby of Baroque opera, the twinkly old nurse, full of humour and wisdom. Often rather crude, often played by a man, the opposite of a trouser role. But Monteverdi gives us one of the best of them in Arnalta, Poppea's nurse. Just as you expect a bit of bawdy bustling, she comes up with this exquisitely tender lullaby for her amoral mistress. Also from the Gardner recording, that was Bernarda Fink as Arnalta, with members of the English Baroque soloists. The sleep that Poppea has been lulled into precedes Ottone's doomed assassination attempt, but she's dozed off, content in the knowledge that the philosopher Seneca, former imperial mentor and counsel, has been made to commit suicide. In his final scene, as his friends and pupils beg him not to die, he slits his wrists and wishes the warm current of my guiltless blood to paint my road to death with royal purple.
Amici, amici, è giunta, è giunta.
Costanza mille macchie indegne, a altre sepie ricerco, un gemito dolente se ne fanno. Prepararmi il bagno, che se la vita corre come il rivo fluente, in un tepido rivo, questo sangue innocente io vuo che vada in corporarmi del morir, del
Francesco Elero d'Artegna as Seneca, with Roberto Balconi, Mark Tucker and Julian Clarkson as his acolytes, John Elliott Gardner directing the English Baroque soloists. Seneca dead by his own hand, Ottavia condemned to be set adrift at sea, Ottone and his ever-devoted Drusilla locked into joint exile. That's where we are by the end of this opera. And Monteverdi and his librettist Businello expect us to surrender to the idea that love has triumphed? Well, surrender we do, because Nero and Poppea are crowned as rulers of Rome, and two thoroughgoing rotters sink into each other's arms in a lubricious outpouring of passion and melody as they sing the final duet, Pur ti miro. I have to mention at this point that the duet, and most of the final act, was probably composed not by Monteverdi himself, but by a pupil or junior colleague. Benedetto Ferrari or Francesco Sacrati are the names that pop up most often, but I've heard Francesco Cavalli mentioned as a possibility. Let's not worry about that today. Somehow it fits with the duplicitousness of most of the characters in the opera. In just 36 years, Monteverdi had brought opera from the celestial myth of Orpheus to the venal story of Poppea and Nero, and I, for one, salute him.
Thank you.
end of Monteverdi's opera The Coronation of Poppea and the end of today's early music show, which was presented by Catherine Bott. The producer was Paul Frankel. Next Saturday, as part of our Baroque spring season, Catherine looks at the recent rediscovery of the Baroque music of Eastern Europe. And that's at the regular time next Saturday, just after 1 o'clock.
Michael Tippett's Piano Concerto, performed by a celebrated interpreter of his music, Stephen Osborne. Radio 3 live in concert with Shostakovich's Eighth Symphony and the work explored in Discovering Music. Friday night, 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's a minute after 2 o'clock, and that means it's time now for Baroque Spring Live, a concert direct from Clandon Park in Surrey, where we join Katie Derham.
Hello and welcome to this National Trust property of Clandon Park for the latest in our series of live concerts of Baroque music in Baroque houses, all part of the Baroque Spring season here on Radio 3. And what a setting. We're in the Marble Hall, which, if we look up, has a stucco ceiling which can only be described as a Baroque riot of cherubs and classical figures. It really is a glorious sight. Clandon Park was built in the 1730s by the politically powerful Onslow family. It was a house for entertaining, for parties, for hunting, and for musical delights. They'd engaged the services of the fashionable Venetian architect Giacomo Leoni. And so, surrounded as we are by Italianate decorative fancies, we're in the perfect venue to enjoy a programme of Vivaldi and Handel given by the Italian ensemble La Risonanza, one of the world's leading Baroque groups. There'll be much more about Clandon Park in the interval feature, in which I'm given the grand tour by National Trust curator Catherine Sharp and my regular guest and expert Lars Tharp from the Antiques Roadshow. And if you'd like to see some pictures of what we saw here, do go and take a look at the website, bbc.co.uk/Baroque Spring. But let's have some music. We're going to start today's programme with two works by Handel, a composer who spent many of his formative years in Italy. First, one of his trio sonatas, the Opus 5, number 4 in G major. Handel wrote this group of trio sonatas in 1738, just as the finishing touches would have been being added to this house. The sonatas were intended to be informal music, to be played at home or in the pleasure gardens of London, exactly the kind of music which the Onslows could have listened to. So let's hear it now. Handel's Trio Sonata in G major, Opus 5, number 4. And please, let's welcome La Risonanza, directed by Fabio Bonizzoni.
Thank you.